Blog Talk Radio.
Bionic Woman fans, we're excited today to have Betsy Dodd, creator of the coolest bionic blog on the planet, bionicblonde.com, and we're going to have a lot of fun discussing the iconic show, what made us love it so much, and we now read her Bionic Blonde site, her synopsis of each episode before watching it now that it's back on air on Cozy TV. So we'll be back in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in to talk about the Bionic Woman. Richard Rossi back with you here on Richard Rossi Live. And Betsy Dodd, welcome to the show. I'm so excited you're here today.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Wow. What a, by the way, if you're listening, you've got to go to bionicblonde.com if you're a fan of the show. It's so much fun. Now, I guess you, like me, were captured as a kid, and you do talk about that. There's a really cute picture of you there with your brothers. Tell us, you know, just your feeling of the memory of, you know, first encountering, you know, Bionic Woman show way back in, what was it, 70? Was it 76 it started, I think? Yeah, what do you remember about that?
Well, I remember that I was never really much of a fan of the $6 Million Man, and, you know, nothing against the series, but it just, you know, for a girl my age, it just never really appealed to me. But I watched it occasionally because I think my brothers were watching it. Mm-hmm. But then they finally got to their second season, and they decided to do a two-part episode where they would introduce a love interest for Steve. And lo and behold, there was the Bionic Woman. And it was like, oh, my God, women can do that? I mean, it was such a wonderful, you know, for girls who didn't get to have superheroes, didn't get to have role models on television of this nature, it was like a dream come true, just in anticipation of knowing that there was a bionic woman coming. But then, as it turns out, it was such an incredible two-part episode, starting with a great script by Kenny Johnson. Mm-hmm. And then they just had the magic of casting Lindsay Wagner, who just had such an immediate, effervescent appeal. You know, it was like you weren't 20 minutes into the show and you were absolutely already in love with Jamie Summers. I mean, she just brought this unique layer to the character that I don't think if they had cast anybody else, we would have cared as much. But instantly hooked, and could hardly wait till the next week, and which did not have a very happy ending.
yes. That was heartbreaking, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and it stayed with me. Oh, my God, I cried so hard at the end of that. And, you know, and I sort of felt like I was alone in that. But as it turns out, it literally swept the nation, and the network got so many complaints. How could you kill her off? This is such a great story, meanies. So they brought her back the following season, and they brought her back to life. So we could all be happy about that again. but what they did was they killed the love story so that, you know, Steve could go on. Because it didn't really fit into a series. Once you, you know, get married and have kids, that completely changes the dynamics of a show. Which, you know, as kids you don't understand. But you kind of get that now. So anyways, the rest was history. Essentially,
yeah.
And we all got to enjoy 3 years of Jamie Summers. So was great.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, you know, looking back on it, because the shows were so huge that she was only 3 years, and I think $6 Million Man was only 4 years, looking back on it.
She had 5 years.
Oh, did she have five years?
Yeah. $6 Million Man went 5 seasons, and she
only went
five.
Yeah,
but they both ended the same year.
And then when they changed the network, do you think the network change, was that one of the reasons that all of a sudden we're not seeing Steve the last season?
Yeah, absolutely. From what I understand, when NBC canceled The Bionic Woman, which, you know, after her second season, which was just like, why in the world would they do that? I believe her show was going strong in the ratings. Had some of the best episodes of the series were in that season. But for whatever reason, she wasn't pulling the demographics they wanted, or, you know, problems with the producers. I mean, I don't really want to get into any speculation on that side. They canceled her show, but NBC decided to pick it up. So she began her third season on a different network, and reportedly, as part of that deal, neither show was allowed to mention the other.
Mm.
That was
really frustrating.
Steve Austin's name. Yeah, oh, it was.
I love how you joke about all the guys that she dates that are the not Steve guys, because that captures, as a boy, every time she would date someone that wasn't Steve Austin, I was like, Jamie, what are you doing? How can you cheat on Steve?
I know. I was terribly, terribly upset, and I, you know, one of the fun things about my blog is that I get to carry that chip on my shoulder and poke fun of it. But yeah, you know, and they really could have solved it with just Oscar saying, you know, over the phone, yeah, well, I'm sorry that you guys broke up or decided to, you know, take some time apart or blah, blah, blah. And that would have been fine, and then you would have known, oh, okay. That sort of opened the door for both of them, you know, dating other people. But they never did that. It's like they always dangled that carrot out there. So you tuned in every week, and then they would, you know, stick her with some other guy, and you would just get mad about it.
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, there's something you can't, you know, quite, you know, plan from a network office, and that's just chemistry. And like you say, casting her, and she was so effervescent, and just the chemistry with them. And I think you had, talking about the initial episode, you say on BionicBlonde.com that the chemistry is just great. And, you know, a lot of big-budget movies spend hundreds of millions of dollars to, you know, and we never buy the love story. And here in this show that was shot, as, you know, Kenny Johnson said, shot pretty quick, and man, it just was there right from the beginning. In fact, the new show, do you think the new show, I got to be honest with you, I never even saw the new attempt to reboot with the new Bionic Woman, but I think it shows that, you know, you just have to have those elements right, because, you know, the new show didn't go so well.
No, it didn't. I remember tuning in for the first episode, the pilot of the new series, and I think this was 2007, maybe, that NBC rebooted the series, and, you know, all new characters with same names and stuff. And by the end of that episode, I was just, is that it? You know, it was so dark and intense. And, you know, and it wasn't a horrible series, but, you know, please don't call her Jamie Summers.
Yeah.
That's not the Jamie that we knew.
Yeah.
And so many, you know, attempts are made today to pull these characters out of old shows and movies and readapt them for modern times. And so many times they completely miss the mark on what it was that made them so great to begin with. And it wasn't, you know, you can't recreate these characters and just include more explosions and have it work.
Yeah.
I mean, you really have to go back to the base, which is the character and what made people love them. And, you know, and I have no problem with them doing a new Bionic Woman series. It's just, don't call her Jamie Summers. Make her somebody else. Start from scratch and, and use your imaginations and create a new character. And if you want to borrow elements of Jamie Summers, which is what I believe they did with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the guy who created that series even named her Buffy Summers. And he pulled some elements of the Jamie Summers character that he adored and built her into a new woman, which is great. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful homage. And in the end, he created a character that had a huge, I mean, hugely successful series. So that's kind of my feeling on it. I'm not big on reboots. You know, if you want to go do something new, that's great, but just use a different name. There's only one Jamie Summers in my book, and this was a 70s character that had so many soft elements to her, great sense of humor. There were just a lot of aspects of her character that it made her more than bionic.
Yes, I agree, you know, wholeheartedly, Betsy, with you on that. I think Lindsay Wagner, being a you know, spiritual person, she really infused this character with you know, a kinder, softer quality, and you know, at times apparently even, you know, went to battle with some of the men on set about, you know, do I really have to kill this bad guy? Let's kind of give him a chance at redemption, or just tie him up instead, you know. And very empowering for women also, wasn't it, that seeing this girl out there doing it?
Yeah, it was. But you know, if you had asked me back in the 70s what I loved about this show, I probably would have said it's because she's bionic, you know. It's because she's strong and she can handle herself and blah, blah, blah. But now when you ask me today what I love about this series, I'm more apt to answer, it's because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing so many other aspects of her character now as an adult. And a lot of times spend more time in my reviews having fun with the aspect of being a woman, because I know what that's like now, whereas I didn't when I was a kid. So I have fun with her, you know, the fact that she can cook and sew, which is like completely awesome, especially because I can't. So I find superheroine qualities in her, just as a woman, that I envy. That has nothing to do with being bionic.
Oh, it's great how we can appreciate these shows as we become adults on a whole different level. I think that's the magic of some of these great shows. Now, you mentioned how heartbroken we were, you know, in the pilot episode with her dying. So, I mean, this is an obvious question, but for those that don't know, it seems like an obvious question. But apparently, I guess as best as we can tell then, there was no plan for this spinoff. Was it all us kids writing the letters and calling in and crying, and they realized we got a gold mine on our hands, you know, we're getting, you know, boxes and boxes of letters? Was the initial plan just to have her die and it was just an episode, as far as you know?
Yes, absolutely. And Kenny Johnson talks about this possibly in one of his commentaries on the DVD, he sort of felt in the back of his mind that she could live and, you know, become more than just a two-part episode. But the producers and network said, no, this is a two-parter, kill her off, let's be done with it. And then they realized, you know, and he sort of said, so they made him go back and write it that way, even though he didn't want to do that ending initially. So when they realized that they had that gold mine on their hands, you know, then he had to go back and come up with a valid reason for her to come back to life, which you don't envy him, you know, especially when he just wanted to say, I told you so.
Well, thank God she was resurrected, huh?
Yeah, cryogenics storyline that brought her back to life, which was believable enough. And like I said, you know, they brought her back to life, but they killed the love story. That was sort of the trade-off. And then she sort of, you know, they literally drove her off into the sunset with her first not Steve, And then
who was the first Not Steve?
Dr. Michael Marchetti, the guy who brought her back to life, and then she.
I didn't like him.
Developed a crush on him, and
yeah.
So they sort of ended it like that, but they kind of semi left the door open too. And what was going on behind the scenes was they had when they realized how successful that Back to Life two-parter was, they approached Lindsay about doing a Bionic Woman series. And she was reluctant at first, but they did finally talk her into it. So she started her series, like, I want to say 4 months later. I mean, it was pretty much unheard of for ironing out a deal and developing scripts and characters. And to hear her talk about it, and the way and to the level that she was involved in the series and direction of the script and character, you really feel like she should have been given a producer credit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think she would be today probably, huh? If it was now, I think she would.
I mean, there are stars of shows today who get producer credits that don't do half what she did in the way of, you know, guiding the series. So, so I sort of feel like they should honor her that now.
Yeah, maybe if they can do one after the fact, if they ever, you know, when they put out the credits on another DVD release. What are some of your favorite episodes that either stayed with you, you know, a memory of it as a kid? I mean, for me, you know, I was a boy, and I'm a musician. And, you know, we all were just so in love with Jamie Summers and writing the letters to the network to get her to come back. And I remember, you know, just the emotion, it had an emotional thing. And a lot of boys, you know, we try to act cool and tough, but she had an emotional thing. Like when she died, I had to kind of hide the misty eyes from, so people wouldn't think I was a sissy. Or I remember when she sang Feelings on the Beauty Contest episode, you know, just kind of swooning and feeling like she was singing right through the TV to me as a boy. But what stays with you in terms of the episodes that really you remembered or that you love now as the favorites?
I had always remembered Doomsday, the two-parter battling Alex supercomputer. That was by far the most memorable episode that I carried with me all those years later. And then, you know, the first two-parter that introduced her character was very memorable for me. Her last episode, On the Run, was another, I'll never forget that one. And there were many episodes in her third season that I had never gotten a chance to watch, and I'm not really sure why I was... One of the things that happened when NBC picked up her show for the third season was they moved her to a Saturday night time slot, which for whatever reason prevented me from being able to watch the show, and I don't remember that many years back why, what else I was doing. But one of my favorite episodes to review that I just happened to see for the first time was Brainwash.
That
was the episode where she went to a beauty parlor and some guy was, like, drugging him under a hair dryer and stuff. And, oh, my God, her hairdo in this episode.
Oh, wow, it got really wild.
It was, like, Brillo hair, 70s perm. And
So
that is by far the most fun I've ever had reviewing an episode.
Yeah, that hair, you just can't forget the hair on that part, yeah. Yeah, and I remember there was also some Oh My Gods at, you know, one of the blouses on that episode.
Very, very low-cut blouse that I still am flabbergasted how they had got that past the network, especially for a so-called children's show on Saturday night.
That was a fun episode. Her friendship, you know, that was kind of, you know, to me, she was such, she was a, you know, the acting that on the show made us believe the love story, made us believe the love between these friends, because, you know, her and her friend really are being challenged there on that one, aren't they? I think the friend thinks she's trying to steal her man.
With Callahan, they had a really great drama scene there, and that was another eye-opening moment for me on just how incredibly talented her co-star was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I can't remember her name now, but the actress
was it
Jennifer Darling? Yes, Jennifer Darling. Yeah.
She's from my hometown in Pittsburgh.
Up until that point, you know, she was playing this, you know, bubbly secretary / fembot in an episode. She got taken over and came back as this stone-faced fembot. So it really wasn't until that episode it was like, oh, my God, she's got some acting chops on her. It's fun to see those moments where that are complete surprises. When you go back and watch the series, and you have a lot more respect for these people as actors, even Richard Anderson. I always sort of remembered him as a slightly over-the-top Oscar Goldman.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you watch his scene in On the Run with Jamie where they're saying goodbye.
What a scene,
Oh, my God. He's an incredibly talented actor. So, and then, of course, Lindsay Wagner, and I've just finished reviewing these episodes, Deadly Ringer from the second season, where she has her arch nemesis, Lisa Galloway,
I think she won the Emmy for that episode.
She did. And so I've just revisited those episodes, and I'm going, oh, my God, she's incredibly talented.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate that she didn't have more opportunities to exercise that, because it was a light drama. You know, you couldn't really pile it on too heavy every week, because that's not the way these shows were designed. But when they had an opportunity to sneak that in.
And particularly the last episode that you mentioned, too, the very last one,
yeah.
She just seemed to just merge, you know, what she was going through as a person into the last episode where she said, I'm tired of being Jamie Summers and I want to become human. And by that time, she was a celebrity who probably whenever she went out in public, people were yelling, Jamie. So once again,
I do think it still happens today. one of the most amazing things that I've discovered by developing this website, and then I'll check the stats and see, you know, where the people who join me on Facebook, where they're from. And I cannot believe the countries that these fans are coming from sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear her say that she couldn't go anywhere without being recognized, it's like, oh, my God, sister, you ain't kidding. You are known around the world, and even places like, you know, like some Arab nations or Pakistan, sometimes I'll see hits come from those countries, and I think, oh, my God, or any place this series hasn't run in syndication, number one, and number two, it kind of causes me to look at the way I sometimes complain about the feminist overtures and how it sort of doesn't jive with today, and you think, no, I can't believe that guy just said that to her. What? You know, you kind of want to smack them. And then to realize that, oh, my God, there are people watching this in countries who would probably give their right arm to have the kind of rights as women that we had even back in the 70s, you know. So maybe I shouldn't complain so much that we've made it this far.
It is an ongoing battle. I mean, you know, just the objectification of women sexually is still a huge thing in the media. And, you know, Lindsay was, of course, a beautiful woman. And, you know, and sometimes they play that to that a little bit with probably some of the beauty contest episodes and things like that. But she really did show that. And by the way, on Monday I have a guy coming on, Alan Doshna, who's a producer, and he's writing with Richard Anderson his biography. So it seems like there's only a couple degrees of separation with everything. Now, how about the wedding? We were so upset with all those Not Steve guys. How did you feel years later? Was it in the the 80s, 90s when they finally had the TV movie and Steve and Jamie got married?
They had three Bionic Reunion movies. And the first two were the first reunion movie came like maybe 10 years after both their shows ended. And in that one, there was they got Steve and Jamie back together, but the purpose of the movie really was to try and reboot the Bionic franchise, and they introduced a new character, Steve's son, who became Bionic, and it didn't take off. It didn't become its own series. And then they got together again like maybe 5 years later, a couple years later, and in that one they tried it again. To introduce a new Bionic character played by none other than Sandra Bullock, early in her career. That didn't take off either, but at least they got Jamie and Steve to the point where they were engaged. That was the big ending there. But in both movies, they really sort of played minor roles. They were like supporting characters and all there to try and see if we can launch this Bionic franchise again with other people. And then by the third time, which I think Richard Anderson was integral in getting, you know, whatever pulled together to get this third movie made.
I think he produced it.
And what wasn't working. They dropped what wasn't working, which was to try and muddy it up with new characters. And just focused on Jamie and Steve again, which was like, oh, thank you. So they did the happy ending. They called it Bionic Ever After, and Jamie and Steve finally made it to the altar, of course not without some problems to get in their way first. So I'm absolutely, completely content with the happy ever after finally ending. Finally getting the ending that those of us who were sort of rooted in the relationship aspect of the series, we finally got what we wanted. So I'm completely thrilled, and I'm happy for them to just leave it like that. You know, they always talk about trying to bring more movies out. People always wonder, and I think, now, you know what, just leave it. Just leave it. That's what we wanted. Let's not mess with a good thing. And try and do something else, you know.
So. Well, I guess like a lot of couples, it's sometimes a rocky road to finally get to that altar, huh?
Yeah. And sometimes a rocky road afterwards, with, you know, don't give us the real life. Let us have this fantasy ending.
Yeah. Well, you've done such a wonderful job. Now, tell us, since we're coming up on a minute here, tell us about the podcast that you'll be doing on commentary on all the episodes.
Okay. Well, I won't be involved in all the episodes, but if you want to Google this or look, there's a link for it on my website too. It's called Cyborgs, a Bionic Podcast, and it's hosted by John Drew and Paul Bisson, and they've been reviewing the episodes of The $6 Million Man, and they have covered the Bionic Woman episodes where she was introduced and then came back to life. So I have been a guest on those podcasts along with James Sherard, who is the world's foremost authority on the Bionic Woman. He had the very first website on her, bionicwomanfiles.com, an amazing collection of memorabilia from the series, including the only known piece of wardrobe that survived the series, which is Jamie's Road to Nashville suit.
Oh, the cowboy, the cowboy.
Yeah,
with the country singer stuff. I remember that.
Yeah, he actually has that suit, and I'm so insanely jealous of him. But Yeah, so the four of us got together and talked about those episodes and had a blast. They're kind of fun. They're on the Cyborgs website or on iTunes, too, right now. Sometime this summer, I think, they're going to get to the Bionic Woman series because they're following in chronological order, and they're almost to the point in the $6 Million Man series where she went off and started her new show, too. So I'll be joining them for some of those podcasts just as soon as those get underway. And anybody who's a fan of either series, I just highly recommend it. It's funny and entertaining, and I learned so much about the series from these guys who have been following it literally for decades. They know so much more. I'm sort of a freshman on the scene. I've only been around for a couple years now. But they're just incredibly fun guys, so I highly recommend it. Cyborgs, a Bionic Podcast.
Wow. Well, I tell you, the 30 minutes has just flown by. I'm so grateful. If you're ever in, look us up if you're ever in, Hollywood area. And
okay.
I think it'd be fun to have you over. And we can get out some Jamie Summers and Steve Austin dolls and $6 Million Man board game, and we'll have some fun playing.
I am so there.
Well, blessings to you, Betsy. This has been just such a fun show. And, keep watching on Cozy, and we will follow along the episodes with BionicBlonde.com. And I just can't thank you for the joy that you've given so many of us to, capture both the childlike aspects that we love about the show as well as how it feels as an adult revisiting it. You've done such a great job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm really flattered that there are some other people out there who are actually reading my ridiculous ramblings. and it motivates me to put the next one in and do it again. So thank you so much for inviting me to the show. And
you're
for
most
reading
welcome, Betsy.
Thank you.
And by the way, listeners, we're out of time, but on Monday's show at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, Alan Doshna will be on talking primarily about his movie he produced, Haunted World, of Edward Wood Jr., about Ed Wood, the iconic guerrilla filmmaker. But Alan is also, as I mentioned, writing the bio with Richard Anderson, and he told me he was just out here with Richard. They just finished it, so that's exciting for us Bionic Woman fans as well. So till Monday at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, you all have a wonderful weekend, and thank you so much for tuning in.